Hello and welcome to What a Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. We're back after what seems like a really long month off. You may have noticed I'm not Ben Haynes, I'm Sean Walsh, because I'm not a traitor and busy doing other things today. And I'm joined by June Summerfield and Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard. Boys, how are we doing?
Hello, very well.
Yeah, decent, thanks, mate. Not too bad.
The listeners can't see this, but on our Zoom call, Dan is wearing a woolly hat because his heating's a bit busted. And
it's just really cold in my house.
that makes it even worse. You haven't even got an excuse.
This is literally how I live my life in winter, just wearing fleeces and woolly hats.
This is how I saw you on the Overground home yesterday. So we were all at the game yesterday. You two were there in a professional capacity. I was there as a fan for, I think it was the first time I've been as a fan since Bayern slapped us 7-2. So that was nice to enjoy. But yeah, we're going to take a look at the game from yesterday and then take a broader look at Antonio Conte's reign so far, because the last pod we did was just before he was confirmed as manager. So we weren't even in the Conte era yet. So we'll start with the 3-0 against Norwich yesterday. What are your guys' general thoughts on that? This is our biggest win of the season in the league, really kind of momentum building. But do you think that the opposition of the opponent is a caveat? And we did have a question from Martin McDonald, who said, are we doing a little over the top with the praise? Because this is a team that are bottom of the league and did have a few chances to score. But let's start with the positives. What were the good things about yesterday?
I felt like it was another step forward, although I didn't think Spurs were as in control as they were against Brentford. I thought it was looser and less comfortable than the Brentford game up until Sanchez's goal. Norwich could not hit a barn door and they couldn't finish their dinner and any other cliches you wish to mention. That they really missed some big chances from, I think, the second minute when Pukki was kind of free in the box and shot straight at Lloris. They had a couple where it just kind of dropped them in the box from 6-7 yards out and they didn't hit the target. So they should have at least made Lloris work. So I thought it was less comfortable, but yeah, it just feels to me at the moment as though with every game, you know, Spurs are taking a small step forward. I mean, just statistically speaking, the Brentford game was the biggest win of the season, the biggest league win of the season on Thursday night, because Spurs hadn't won by more than a clear goal up to that point. And then they went and topped it by winning by three clear goals against Norwich. So it just feels like very slowly but surely everything's just kind of clicking into place. And obviously the quality of the opponents, two newly promoted clubs, and before that Leeds, who were really struggling, is a caveat. But you can only beat what's in front of you. And, you know, that I'm sure there could well be a bump in the road in the next three with Brighton, Leicester and Liverpool coming up. But, you know, nonetheless, you have to say that these last three have been really encouraging.
Yeah, for sure. It's nice to get a comprehensive win as well. And Spurs are going to need a few more, seeing as they're like still in minus goal difference at the moment somehow after those 3-0, those like back-to-back 3-0 defeats under Nuno. So, yeah, it's good little baby steps. I mean, as Dan said, on another day with strikers who have a little more pedigree than Pukki, Adam Ida, I think Josh Sargent had a really good opportunity at the end of the game and ended up kicking it with his right foot onto his left foot and the ball like squirmed onto the edge of the area. But yeah, it's nice to see the structure in place because there was nothing. It was just vibes under Nuno and before that Mourinho. So it's much better to see everything in place and seeing how the team builds attacks. And they scored like 7 in their last 3 in the league, which is much better than the grinding out of the 1-0s. So yeah, it's looking better for sure.
Yeah, we're on the right track.
It's been said by a few people in the last few days, but you know, there are definitely Conte type situations emerging all over the pitch, which is so encouraging. And I think, you know, many of us thought that could take even longer, perhaps even Conte himself, given the way he was talking, you know, repeating Nuno and that he was bemoaning kind of lack of time on the training pitch and the amount of matches. But obviously the second goal against Brentford was straight out of Conte's playbook. And I think there were, you know, plenty of scenarios against Norwich that were quite Conte-like as well. And it really just feels like Spurs are getting there. They're obviously not able to play his football for 90 minutes at the moment, or perhaps even the majority of the game, but they're able to do it for enough of the game to beat these type of teams, which is why, you know, playing the likes of Brighton, Leicester and Liverpool, who are, you know, just better sides, will be, you know, really revealing as to where Spurs are under him.
Yeah, I think certainly from the start of the Brentford game to the end of the Norwich game, there's this one move which we do under Conte where it's like one of the centre-backs gets the ball, they play a direct ball between the line, and whoever's there, they've got their back to the opposition goal. They play a quick pass to the side. And the first few instances in both games, the ball always seemed to cannon off Son or Lucas or whoever's trying to control the ball. And I think by the end of those games, we were finding it a bit more easy, maybe because the game opens up a bit more, or later in the game, we're already winning them. But it does seem like the more we play, the more rhythm we're getting, the more momentum we're getting. And I guess that is the caveat to maybe we won't be as fit as we want to be, but at least we know what we're doing tactically. And that should help us over the next month, really busy month, at least until, I think, I said to you, Dan, yesterday, it'd be good to get to the Liverpool game with some momentum so that we can have that Liverpool game as a real yardstick of progress. We don't want to interrupt that flow. And I do think that we play Brighton and Leicester at opportune times, because I think neither of them are in particularly amazing form. So yeah, hopefully that continues. One other notable improvement is that we've moved away from the Jose model success of just rely on Son and Kane to bail us out. It feels like everyone across the team is pulling their weight and doing their bit.
And that's really excellent, because you don't want to be relying on one player in particular. And when, you know, a player like Kane has a drop off in terms of statistics, I actually thought he played okay yesterday, and on a few other games, he might have had a couple. And if this was in a season where he was bagging, you know, he had got 20 goals by this time, he hadn't scored, you just think it was one of those games where he just couldn't rifle it in. But the good thing is that, you know, you've got players like Ben Davis bringing the ball out of defence and finding some attacking quality in the right moments. I'm not sure how often you can rely on Lucas Moura to bang in a goal that good, because we know he loves running into a cul-de-sac about 10 or 15 times a game. We should talk about that goal though, right? That was absolutely incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It was absolutely ridiculous.
God.
Like,
it's just everything about it, from, because it starts with Reguilón almost losing the ball, but he just about saves it with a back heel, and we play it across the other side so well. And Lucas has the really nice interplay with Son, and it just, everything about it felt so perfect. And I was sat behind that goal, and you could just see, like, the way that he was running up to it felt like it was going in slow motion. Just like, oh, it's going top bins. You just know it's going in.
I think in Lucas's mind, that's what he is as a player.
Yeah, that's what he thinks he is every single week.
Yeah, like, I'm just going to spin away from a defender and bang it in the top corner, but it never really works out like that. It was such a good
goal. Was the skill to beat Gilmore was great as well. It was that kind of school playground skill when someone's just way better than everyone else and can just kind of knock it round them and just run round the other way and then stick it in the top corner. But it had a bit of everything. It had skill. It had a bit of poise with the 1-2 with Son. It had a bit of scuffling because he had to kind of scuffle away from the second man. I can't remember who it was. Norwich at number 40 or 44. And then it had the finish that was unsavable. But he just has these games, Lucas, where, you know, obviously there's one famous example, but he does have these games where he just feels unplayable. And it can happen kind of against all different types of opposition. I mean, being a little bit cruel, it does tend to happen more against the Norwiches of this world, but sometimes it just feels like he's really difficult to stop. And I felt like he had a first half like that yesterday, where when he was breaking, Norwich were just resorting to fouls. I think Billy Gilmore got booked for bringing him down. And everything was kind of coming off, his little flicks, his dummies, obviously the goal. Yeah, everything he did felt like it was working. And he has those games. He doesn't have enough of them, which is what Conte said afterwards. You know, he needs to score more. He needs to do that more often. But he does have those games where you suddenly think, my God, he's amazing. Which is why I'll go back to my campaign for Lucas Moura to go and play in the Championship and just be amazing every week. I think it would be really fun. But I, you know, you like to think that Conte is going to improve everyone. So, you know, perhaps we just could see that unplayable, unstoppable Lucas on a more regular basis. It would obviously be very nice.
Attention parents and students. We have an incredible exclusive offer from our friends at ProPrep. This is the perfect study tool for university students undertaking science, technology, engineering, or maths-related modules. It can halve your study time. ProPrep provides bite-sized videos relevant to the module or course, which can be accessed from any device at any time. It has already helped over 500,000 students to pass their exams. They provide customized STEM study tools that match your syllabus. Long lectures are condensed into short and clear video tutorials. And after the videos, you can go through what you've just learned with interactive exercises and practice questions so you'll be ready. You can even submit questions to the ProPrep professors and receive a video answer within 24 hours. ProPrep created a special offer just for our listeners. All you need to do is go to their website, proprep.uk/info/football, for more information. And our listeners can sign up for a free 30-day trial now. No credit card information required. That's proprep.uk/info/football. ProPrep, the ultimate study tool.
Two others who really have come on leaps and bounds under Conte so far. Oliver Skipp, two man of the match displays in a week. And Ben Davis, who suddenly is just this massive goal threat and bringing the ball out from the back extraordinaire.
Yeah, he's like Tottenham's Azpilicueta now, it seems. Like he just manages to find the little space where he is charging forward, and you've got Reguilon usually, who's out wide, and then Sessegnon obviously came on yesterday. But he's always been like a decent cross of the ball. He's probably never got the stats to back it up that he should have done, but it's nice that he has only ever really been a squad player for Spurs, unless when Danny Rose has been injured. But it's nice that we're getting improved levels from these players, and it's not just like a this squad is poor issue that has been, you know, that has been banded around a lot. There are players that need to be moved on for sure, but there's ways of getting better performances out of these players, and everyone's contributing, which is excellent at the moment.
I think when
sorry, Sean.
That's okay, go.
I was going to say on Davis, I mean, it's only been a few games, obviously, and we can't get too carried away. But, you know, I wonder, you know, whether we're genuinely about to see his kind of best run of form at Spurs, which is saying something, because he was obviously a you know, part of Pochettino's squad from the very beginning. I think he was one of Pochettino's very first signings. But he, yeah, you know, he had, you know, long spells of filling in for Danny Rose when he was injured. So it's not like he's not played many games, but I can't really remember, you know, too many spells where he was, you know, anything more than just kind of solid each game. But he does feel like that left centre-half position, which I think most people knew because he played it well for Wales, and he did play it briefly for Mourinho from time to time and Pochettino. But I think we all knew that that was a position that would perhaps suit him better than wing-back or left-back. And he just seems to really, really be enjoying it. And yeah, as you said, he's popping up in the box and looking a huge threat. So I wonder if we could be about to see genuinely Davis's sort of best ever run in a Spurs shirt if he can keep this up. Which is really nice, because he's been around for a long time. Been a
you love surf, gentle Ben, don't you?
I love him. I love him in the from a kind of work perspective. He just seems like a top bloke. He's always the guy that likes fronts up. I remember like when Spurs lost to Colchester in the League Cup. Do you remember when Pochettino's reign was kind of disintegrating? Yeah. And I needed some quotes afterwards, and it was gentle Ben who stepped forward. And, you know, I've loved him in sort of that respect, in that he's obviously a top bloke, but I can't say I've sort of loved him as a footballer, particularly over the last few years. But that's why I'm kind of hopeful and excited that he could, you know, keep up this form and really have a run where you think, okay, actually, you know, he is a much better footballer than perhaps he's been given credit for over the years.
Yeah, he played a really nice part in the third goal, which was a really nice finish from Son. And it was a nice little link up with Ollie Skip just before as well, who had another great game against his old club. What was nice about Ollie Skip is this, I'm sure you guys would have heard it in the stadium, but on the few occasions where he recovered the ball when, you know, maybe he shouldn't have from Norwich's perspective, there was a really aggressive and lovely roar from the crowd when he did. Everyone got really psyched up by him winning the ball back. I think there was one where he sort of slid near the touchline, sort of controlled it while he was on the floor and managed to get it back. So he's in a really awesome vein of form now. And there will be bigger tests to come. And I don't think he's really excelled against those big teams. I mean, it's not particularly his fault. We haven't played any big teams with a proper structure in place as of yet. So we'll see how he holds up against those better teams. But yeah, it's encouraging signs. And it's just that partnership with Højbjerg I'm not totally convinced of yet. Because Skip's a very all-action player, isn't he? And you've sort of got Højbjerg who sits behind him and sometimes doesn't always create like the right angles for a pass, and you just sort of stay a bit too static. So just worried about that partnership. But he was brilliant yesterday, for sure.
I think it was kind of fitting that Skip did that against Norwich as well, because I think I certainly thought, or I think you could have made a case anyway, that in the first few months of the season, you know, he was doing well, he was always solid, but you did wonder if it would have, you know, if he would have benefited from going back to Norwich and, you know, learning about the Premier League there. And you look at kind of Chelsea, who were able to say to Gilmore and Gallagher, you know, go and learn go and learn about this league at a lesser club where there's less pressure, and, you know, come back and fight for a place here. I did think, you know, Spurs just don't have that luxury, and that's a shame. And it might have helped Skip. But now, you know, the last couple of games, you know, he does look like one of Spurs' most important players. He looks like he's been playing in the Premier League for a lot longer than he has. And actually, you know, he'd obviously be a huge loss if he wasn't at the club at the moment. So I think, you know, in that respect, he's proving that not going back to Norwich or going on loan elsewhere was absolutely the right move from the club and from him.
Gives me real Scott Parker vibes, even down to the 360ing. So,
what kind of player do you think he'll be, Sean? Though, I mean, if you had to compare him, or maybe there isn't a comparison, but I don't. Yeah, Scott Parker's not a bad shout. I think he's going to be more.
Box to be more box. Carricky, or box to box.
Well, I think Conte's trying to give him license to get forward. And Conte, when he spoke about him, you know, really honed in on the, you know, possession side of his game as the area that can improve. I think Conte's probably broadly happy with what he's doing off the ball. You know, his work rate, you know, those tackles that Jude mentioned. But I think he's trying to make him into, you know, he's got a cracking pass on him. So yeah, maybe Carrick's not a bad comparison. Carrick also had the ability to kind of do those runs from deep and sort of beat men, just sort of ease past them. I don't know, but I'm just kind of excited to see what he can become. But I think he's more than just a kind of holding player, obviously. I think we're gradually seeing that.
I remember when he was first breaking through / the really kind of top player in the youth teams, someone I know followed them closely. The comparison that was always brought up was Nemanja Matic. Now, Nemanja Matic is like 6'3" and really well built, so I don't think it's going to directly translate into that. But if he's at least 80% of that, given his height, I think that's still a really, really, really nice player to have in there. And I guess nowadays it does help that this is a player who was brought through the system and genuinely does love the club. So I think that's that will work in our favour. So, Jude, you touched on it briefly about Kane. You thought he was okay. Is anyone here genuinely worried about him, though? I wrote a piece earlier about... It's weird because I don't think he looks unfit, but he doesn't look like this fully sharp goal scorer who is really causing a lot of danger either. I think yesterday was probably the most dangerous he's looked all season, and even then it wasn't anywhere near where he was last season.
It's a bit of a weird one. I'm not really sure what the problem in particular is, because he got into the right positions yesterday. I don't think he sees as much of the ball as he did under Mourinho last season, simply because that was the whole plan. It was just get the ball to Kane and maybe he'll do something good. I do think we're sort of yet to see his quarterback best this season. Because I think if you're playing wing backs and you're getting them really high up the pitch and Kane wants to drop deep, he should have more options for passes. He should be able to pick out, you know, Reguilon or Sessegnon on the left, or Emerson or Tanganga on the right. So I don't know. I think if one of those, you know, if the chip had gone in, that might have been, I think he probably should have scored with the chip. Because
he tries that chip all the time. Oh, and I don't think it's ever worked. I don't think it's ever worked.
Yeah. I mean, Krull's not the most mobile of goalkeepers, and he was so far out. Like, he had a lot of the goals waiting for. But then he played his part for the third or the second. I think it was the second goal that Sanchez played. So that Sanchez scored.
He was from his shot that they got the corner from, yeah.
Yeah, so I do think on another day, maybe he gets one or two, and that we don't really talk about it. But it is weird just to have one Premier League goal after all this time. But maybe it's a good thing that Spurs are scoring goals without having to rely on him so much. But as you said in your piece as well, Sean, like, he needs to start scoring goals for himself as well as the team. Because after the summer he had, where he was itching for a move away, he needs to get that sort of profile back up again, for sure. But yeah, it's a weird one.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say I'm worried about him, and I think. Generally, it's always a fool's game to doubt Kane or criticise him, really, because he just, as we all know, has made a career on proving people wrong and responding to that kind of doubt and criticism. But I will say, I do think he looks leggy, quite leggy. You know, there was a couple of times against Brentford and Norwich when he just wasn't able to make the most of a decent counter-attacking situation that the team had kind of engineered. He looks hesitant, I think, on the ball. You know, he doesn't look as sure of himself. We saw a couple of really, you know, quality instinctive passes against Brentford, and I think, you know, when he's not thinking about it so much, he's, you know, still able to play those balls that no one else in the Spurs squad and not many other people in the Premier League are able to play. But, you know, I don't think he looks right at the moment, and I also don't think, you know, Conte made the point that the team just needs to create chances for him. But, you know, the chances that have been created in the last few games, he has missed. You know, he missed a one-on-one against Fernandes on Thursday night, and he obviously missed a couple against Norwich, albeit I do agree with Jude that on a different day, you know, he might have scored a couple. So, yeah, I don't think he looks right. But I wouldn't say I'm unduly worried about it at the moment. The players around him have stepped up, but, you know, Conte has clearly kind of sparked Lucas and Son into life. Son was kind of quietly on a really bad run of form that hadn't really been picked up on. But he's come back to life in the last few games. And it just still hasn't quite happened for Kane. But I do think there have been incremental improvements. It's just that kind of question as well. You know, Conte said he's going to play every game. You know, does he just need to play through this and to build up the sharpness? Because he obviously missed a lot of pre-season. Or does he need more rest? I mean, you never know with him, do you? But I suspect Conte saying that he couldn't drop him, which is what he said at the press conference before Norwich, is music to Kane's ears, because he obviously wants to play every single minute of every game, as we know.
I don't think Conte was too confident when he was talking about using Bergwijn as a number nine either. I know I wasn't too confident about that. Guy's got
four goals
in 61 games. I'm not confident about that. But I think you're right, Dan. You touched on the hesitancy. It's because he does get in when he has these runs, no matter how rare it is for him to be on like a barren streak. It is the hesitancy where he takes half a second too long. He just waits. I think the thing that stands out for me was, do you remember we played Inter away in the Champions League in the group stage a couple of years ago, and at 0-0, I think Eriksson chipped one over the top for him, and he was 1-1 with the keeper. And you were just expecting him to hit it, and he just stuttered and stuttered and stuttered, and eventually the keeper just came and swept it away. And I think that's kind of what he looks like now, and he is stuck in his own head. I think the thing that doubly worries me is that you would say, like, to get out of this kind of form, all he needs to do is smash in a couple against some crap sides, and he'll have that kind of goal scoring touchback. And he's been doing that in the Conference League and for England, and it's still not translating into the Premier League goals. But, you know, a lot of Premier League games to come this month. It's really unlikely he's going to go without scoring a few more. So, not too worried, I guess. Just a quick one from yesterday's presser. This is from Ram Prasad. Antonio Conte was very emotional in his press conference after the game, and it seems like he already has an emotional connection with the fans. For those who didn't watch the game, Conte clapped the south stand when they were singing his name towards the end of the game. Ram Prasad asks us to name a Spurs manager that you found that has connected with the fans so quickly. And I think there's one obvious answer. But
I think that I personally
bought into him just because it was the start of a new process and it wasn't Tim Sherwood. I think
you're rewriting history here, mate. I remember calling for his head before the Villa game.
I don't think people were buying into him after the losses to West Brom at home and the draw with. I can't remember if I'm honest.
The obvious one's Hoddle, right? I mean, he had the fans on side immediately, but apart from Hoddle, who had that connection for obvious reasons, I just can't remember. I mean, Yol was well liked. Harry made a question with the Arsenal game.
I was thinking Harry Redknapp, but just because of that, like, just easiest way to get fans on side like that. Do you think then that Conte has done this quicker than anyone we can remember? Then is this almost unprecedented?
I mean, Conte had fans singing Antonio. Certainly on the train to Leeds, I heard a lot. On the train to Everton, I heard a lot of chanting, you know, getting off at Liverpool, Lime Street, you know, Antonio. And at the game, there were lots of Italy flags. So that was, what, the first league game, his second game in charge. I think Conte, given his reputation and given kind of 2 years of just awfulness that preceded him, probably is the quickest that I can remember in terms of fans just buying into it straight away.
Yeah, it comes from the Nuno and Mu factor as well, doesn't it? Because I don't think fans really buy into Mu slagging off the squad and, you know, protecting
himself. Well, it was really 50-50 with Mourinho, wasn't it? Because you had this, like, you know, the Mourinho cult who really loved him. It was like he's a born winner and all this kind of nonsense.
You're part of that cult, right, Sean?
How dare you? That's the most horrible thing you've ever said to me.
Mourinho, there was always the Chelsea connection, which put off some fans who, you know, might have bought into it more. So yeah, I don't think Mourinho was ever kind of universally revered as quickly as Conte has been.
Fair, yeah. Okay.
Did you see him slagging off journalists this week, by the way? Having him pop our salaries.
Well, Mourinho, yeah.
Incredible. He's lost. Unbelievable.
He's getting through it a lot quicker this time around. Like, fair play to him. He's going for a new record, I think.
there were reports as well I saw that Everton would be interested if they were to get rid of Rafa. And it was just like, I think Goodison Park would simply blow up from the boos that would ring around. Like, that's already the most miserable club in the world. They don't need that added misery in their life. But yeah, okay, let's move on to Conte Spurs in general, since it's been a few weeks since our pod. What do you guys think the biggest changes he's made is, and what's impressed you the most? Michael made a comment that we look functional again with not many major kind of personnel changes from the Nuno era. You certainly haven't been able to use the transfer market anyway.
Jude, you going?
I'm having a little think. I honestly just think it comes down to a distinct style of play, doesn't it? And a manager who does get in amongst the squad and who does chat with most of them, because we had a we sort of know that Nuno was very much hands off as a manager. He didn't really talk to his players that often. There's a weird vibe during the early parts of the season, but it just seems as if, you know, the players have a good idea of what they're supposed to do. And I think there are a few interviews recently, like Eric Dyer's interview, I think in the Mail, where he was chatting about working under Conte. I think they just have a greater idea of what's supposed to happen and how they can get results on the pitch. But yeah, in particular, I'm not too sure. I just think it's getting the best out of good players, but not necessarily relying on your absolute best players to get your results. I think it's a bit long-winded. You'll probably punch a few holes in that, but
Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, we've already spoken about individuals, and that's obviously been hugely impressive how players who, like Ben Davis, who, you know, we knew were kind of solid and could help the team, you know, seem to have just gone up to levels that I don't think many of us expected. You know, likewise, just the whole defence, really. I mean, I think there was a general view that, you know, particularly during Mourinho's time, that the defence was kind of beyond help, but Conte's immediately made them into a functioning unit, and, you know, a couple of clean sheets in the last 4 days, obviously, very encouraging. Again, Liverpool and possibly Leicester will kind of put that improvement to the test, but that's reflected throughout the team, I think. Suddenly Spurs just look like a group of middling players, which is what Conte said, but very, very well coached middling players, instead of middling players who aren't being coached and are therefore, you know, be below middling. So yeah, essentially I just think Spurs are starting to look like the sum of their parts, or slightly greater than the sum of their parts, which I don't think has been true for a couple of years, really. So yeah, he's lifted the whole mood. He's lifted almost everything about the club. You know, we've mentioned the supporters. He's definitely lifted the players. He's changed a lot in a relatively short space of time. So yeah, I mean, long may it continue, really. But I don't think, you know, it's anything many of us didn't expect, given his reputation. I suppose we'll come on to this, I think, but he has stuck more or less to the same players in the league, hasn't he? And for the Vitesse game. And I do think he was taken aback by kind of how bad Miura was. So, you know, it will be interesting to see what happens on Thursday night against Rennes.
I think the big thing for me was the Leeds game. And it really felt like a kind of seismic shift between the Spurs of the last 2 years, which we kind of saw in the first half, didn't really know what they were doing, just looked flat. It looked like, you know, Nuno or Mourinho are still in charge. And then the second half, where I don't think there wasn't like a spectacular one or two players. It wasn't about that. It was about everyone collectively raising their game, everyone having kind of 7 out of 10 performances, but that being enough to turn the game around and really kind of lift that mood, like you said, Dan. You just touched on there about his team selections, how I think in the Prem it's been the same 12 or 13 different players. He has like a settled core. Obviously Romero's got injured, and then Emerson's out yesterday, Reguilon got brought off. So only a couple of minor changes. I'm skipping about that suspension as well, actually. But you do see like who are his favourites already, who are the players he can rely on. So what do we think that means for the likes of, you know, Dele and Ndombele, even Lo Celso and Winks?
Like Dele in particular, I'm not sure how it gets any better, which I actually feel quite sad saying, but I don't really know what position he'd take up in this current formation and how he could improve the team being in there. I don't know if that's being harsh, but I do think maybe his time is coming to an end. And then with the likes of Ndombele and Lo Celso, they don't seem like they're trusted either. And I don't think they'd really fulfill the position Skip's taking up as well. So yeah, and they're not even getting the chances in the Europa Conference League anymore because they can't be trusted. you can't go losing to Mura and expect game time. That's the problem. You've got players like Harry Winks, who he was very vocal about, you know, the first and second strings going out to Vitesse, and you know, I in hindsight that was a pretty poor move from the then manager. But you're not going to be rewarded with game time if that's the type of performance that you're putting in. So it's difficult to see how they get back into the team. It's going to be a big month and rotation will be necessary, but in those really core parts of the team, it's tough to see where they come back.
Yeah, I agree with that. It is getting harder to see a future for particularly Delhi, Winks and Ndombele, I think. I suppose what I would say is people that know more about Conte than I do and have kind of studied him at Chelsea and Inter said that he always starts by creating a kind of solid base and then kind of adds players like Fabregas or Eriksen even at Inter, who are a bit more creative and expressive once he has the fundamentals in place. And we've anyone who's listened to one of his press conferences will know that he says, "I'm not scared a lot." And he also talks a lot about creating a solid base and a foundation and then kind of building off that. And you look at the team he's picking at the moment, and that's obvious. You know, it's the hardworking players, generally the players who are, you know, kind of have those intangibles like commitment and focus and whatnot, and generally players who are kind of soldiers, I guess, and who are malleable and who are going to do what they're told tactically. And it's not the, you know, the Ndombeles of the squad. So I wonder whether once he has the principles in place, then he starts maybe introducing Lo Celso, possibly Ndombele, but it is getting harder to really see a future for those guys, particularly as I think I kind of get what Jude's saying about the Højbjerg Skip midfield. There's not a lot of maybe enough creativity in there, but you know, if he really thinks Skip can massively improve on the ball, which is what he said, then having Højbjerg just sit and as a water carrier and kind of do the simple things and letting Skip kind of burst off that platform, I think that will kind of appeal to him. So where would Ndombele play? You know, where would Delhi play? He sees kind of Son and Lucas as auxiliary strikers, as sort of second and third strikers behind Kane. So I'm not sure they'll play in that role. What's been talked about a lot is a kind of switch to a 3-4-1-2. So Son joining Kane up front, and then there's a number 10 in behind. And that would obviously change things because then that might create a spot for Delhi or Lo Celso or Ndombele. But yeah, at the moment, he's picking the guys who I think are able to kind of respond to his philosophy and his instructions best, and you know, that reflects well on them and doesn't reflect particularly well on the rest of the squad.
I think there's an ironic thing in that. I think if you were to improve the team in an attacking sense, you'd probably want someone who is good on the ball, who can pick a pass, but is also kind of, they could float forward and have that kind of bit of goal threat as well. So you could play them in a front three with Kane and Son, or in the midfield with Skip and or Højbjerg. And I think the perfect person for that role would be prime Christian Eriksen, which is really sad to think about, but yeah. That brings us on to the next thing, I guess. So with those guys struggling to get game time, who do we think is going to go out the door? And this is from Ogi Del Mundo, one who wonders, how dramatic do you think the January transfer window is going to be? And as an aside, we finished in his Spotify Wrapped for 2021. So thank you for your support. And he wonders, he asks, do you think that we could get top four this season?
I don't think January will be as dramatic as has been made out, to be honest. I don't think there'll be a whole raft of outgoings. There might be one or two, but they'll have to be the right deals for the club, won't they?
Really. Shift them off to Newcastle.
be nice if Delhi could go to Newcastle and like become their main man and start afresh. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be that dramatic, really. I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, I think January is never a particularly busy window. I mean, it's always built up by people like me in the media, but sometimes by managers as well. You know, it's always kind of built up by fans
it's
and everyone.
It's that Garth Woodman, isn't it? Where he's got the X in his face, like, oh, wonder who that's for.
You love that one.
I do love that one. It's a good one.
Top four, though. Yeah, yeah, that's an odd one as well, because they're like 2 points off with a game in hand. I think
we're back, baby.
I know. I mean, do you even allow yourself to think about that right now? You should. Because
I think it's there, depending on United. I mean, I think there's three teams who are going to get it. West Ham are looking very, very good, but I wonder if West Ham are going to have a sort of Pochettino Spurs type season, because they're just doing too well in Europe and the League Cup.
Such a thin squad as well.
Well, that's it, yeah. So do they get to February and just kind of, you know, win one in six or something and just fall away because they're in too many competitions and their squad's not big enough? So I do think it's there. I mean, it really depends on whether United get their act together, because obviously they've got the fourth, or perhaps second or third best squad in the league. So if Rangnick can get a tune out of them, then I think, you know, they'll be favourites to get fourth. But I think Spurs have one of the best coaches now. And that squad, for me, the squad is only a couple of additions away from really being able to challenge, you know, and another kind of winger who could play up front and deputise for Kane. And then perhaps, you know, a centre-half, depending on Romero, or certainly a centre-midfielder. And I think, you know, it suddenly starts to look very different. And just to go back to January, while I don't think it'll be really busy, I think probably Winks, I think possibly Bergwijn, and I think probably Dele. You know, the club is probably going to start saying to them, you know, think about any offers you get. I think that them in particular, I mean, Doherty already seems to be behind Tanganga for that spot. And
you don't think his 20-minute cameo was enough to save him yesterday?
I think he did okay yesterday, actually.
That's probably the best he's ever played for us, honestly.
Mm. Yeah, and probably balanced out the side, you know, quite nicely, actually. But yeah. I don't see a future for him. And, you know, he's still a big part of the Ireland squad, isn't he? And it's just one of those where it's in everyone's interest. That, you know, same for Winks, same for Dele, I think that they go now. Mm.
Yeah, thanks for the gift, but it's time to go.
I think going back to top four, the thing that I keep thinking about is when you look at the final league tables of the last few years, even when we've been so bad, we've still managed to rack up 60-something points and been about two wins away from getting into the top four. And now I think we have a top, top, top coach. We have the one window to at least try and iron out the squad a little bit better. As long as we're just hanging in there, say we're going into like the final five or six games of the season, we're where we are now, we're 2 points off the top four, with or without the game in hand, it doesn't really matter. If we're just there hanging around and hopefully not getting distracted by the Conference League, which we'll come to in a minute, there is a real chance for us, just because of how I imagine Conte taking that down the stretch. I think he will really, really help us in that sense.
Agreed, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And like, depending how the next month or so goes, if Kane does get his act together and he starts banging in goals and we start winning like 4 or 5 nil, you know, that will help us close the gap on those above, for sure.
It is it's a cliche, but if we beat
Liverpool 5-0, then it's all
right. It's a cliche.
I don't believe.
It's a cliche, but with one goal and 13, you could Kane has not really been in much this season. So when he does start scoring, it will be like a new signing when you think about it.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's great. Okay. So quickly moving on to Rennes on Thursday. We need a win to top the group on head-to-head. Anything less and we go either into the playoff round. Great.
No.
We go out.
I think we're 4 points behind.
We can all win the group.
We can't win the group. What?
We can only make the tin pot preliminary.
Oh my god, I was just assuming we'd go top. What the hell?
No, okay, we're 4 points behind.
Okay, that answers my next question. Is it better to go out? Yes. But the problem with that is we would have to not win the game and have to deal with the humility of being knocked out of the Europa Conference League at the group stage. But is it better to do it now and rip that plaster off and get all the fans laughing at us now than in, say, March when we just eventually give up on the competition?
Well, as I've said from the start, every scenario in the Conference League is embarrassing.
Such a loose situation.
It's... If Spurs lose to Rennes and miss out in the playoff and go out in the group as the inaugural English side in the new competition, it's hugely embarrassing. Equally, if Spurs have to do a playoff in whenever it is in the new year,
yeah,
it's also quite embarrassing having to do a playoff to get through to the knockouts of that competition. It's kind of embarrassing winning it. Yeah. That being the first trophy, it's also kind of embarrassing not winning it. So it's... I feel like... You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't with it. I mean, it would have been better to have not been in it altogether. I think there's things to consider. I mean, one of them is Conte with clear weeks on the training ground in the new year could, I think, really get Spurs cooking. And as Sean said, with a couple of clever additions and, you know, no European football in the new year, you'd surely start to think that fourth was within reach. And then that would be a huge boost to be back in the Champions League next season and have that to offer financially and to new signings, etc. Equally, conference games, even though they're not selling out the stadium, given the revenue power of that stadium, you know, do Spurs want to be in the competition just to help ease off, you know, the COVID impact, which was sort of laid bare quite recently in the accounts? You know, is it useful just to have the TV money and the match day revenue? There's lots of things, but I mean, my view is probably, you know, just it wouldn't be an awful thing if Rennes win or get a point and Spurs are out.
I would love for Conte just to completely throw out under 18s and then there's post-match conference give out the old Jeremy Clarkson. Oh no, anyway.
I don't spend too much time thinking about the Conference League, so I don't have an answer on this one. It's like I play football on Thursdays most. I am actually going to go to the game because somebody's offered me tickets. So I was like, why not? But, like, yeah, usually not watching.
But the other thing I didn't just say, but is a factor, is it's so winnable under Conte as well. You know, it's absolutely there for the taking to win the whole thing. And that would also be a kind of a way to accelerate the process, I think. You know, even though there is some debate about whether that would change the mentality, blah, blah, blah. But getting that monkey off the back, the trophy monkey, and winning a European Cup, you know, would be, you know, I think it would be a great way to end his first season.
Conte has the same kind of stigma where that he can't manage in Europe because for some reason he can't do it. He got knocked out of the Champions League twice with Inter in the group stage. He got knocked out of the Champions League with Juventus and they went into the Europa League when the final was in their stadium and they couldn't even get to the final. So maybe Conte even needs it just for himself a little bit.
Although, would winning the Conference League sort of, you know, would that put Conte's Champions League critics to bed? I'm not sure it would.
Yeah, what if he gets to the final and he beats Mourinho? Though I guess that relies on Mourinho still being at Roma and getting to a final.
Yeah, he's more likely to beat Bodo Glimt in the final than Mourinho.
That's the real pinnacle of their rivalry. I beat Bodo Glimt and you didn't in the Conference League. All right. Anyone got anything to add?
I think we've rattled through quite a lot there.
I think we've rattled through a lot for this nice catch-up sesh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been good chatting with you boys. Hopefully we'll be back with you sometime this week or next for another edition and we won't go away for a month like we have this last month. Thanks for tuning in. Please remember to subscribe and leave a rating on whichever podcast network you use and we'll see you next time.